have 15 to 20 million
jobs. I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leader.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, serving the entire southeastern Pennsylvania area, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. I'm extremely pleased to welcome you and ask that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in. If you received our email notice this morning, send it out to a family member or friend and invite them to tune in as well. They can go to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And if it's afterwards, they can go on the Listen Anytime link and join us for many great conversations, helping American workers, promoting businesses, and of course, sharing ideas in a positive way. I would like to, first of all, welcome our panel members who do a great job each and every week. I get a lot of great compliments about them. I want to thank Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, for his outstanding participation. I mean, you've given a lot of people ideas and shown them that with focus and consistency, anything is possible. And Larkin Conley, National Small Business Advocate, has certainly given his opinions, and he said this year he's going to be direct and to the point, and I love it. And Rich Logis, Principal of RJL Technology Integration, always a man who's ready to let it all out. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, and also as our special guest today is Curtis Ellis, the Executive Director of the American Jobs Alliance, who's also well known for being a contributing person in the media and also who has served our President Trump, and he's always giving us some ideas. Great to have you again with us, Curtis. And today I want to ask everybody to just lay it out on the line. In the last few days, we watched and we heard a lot of endless reports about a statement made by the president at a meeting. I wasn't there, so I can't give an opinion. However, the national media just continues to consume all the rigmarole, not telling us what we can do to unite, but trying to divide us. I don't like that at all. We have to remind the media, we have to remind all the elected officials that we're all of one blood, and God created us all as human beings. We're all one blood, and we are equal. I find what the media continues to do by not focusing on what benefit the tax cuts could do and all the regulations being reduced and all of the people getting back to work. I find that them not focusing on that is very poor judgment. They've wasted our times giving us a lot of facts and figures, and I think it's time for them to change their ways, because people like myself are beginning to more and more tune out and get involved with broadcasts like this and many others. And I want to add one last thing. I have seen in the last few years that many of our local news media that would not promote American-made or anything like that because they didn't want to offend other customers, all of a sudden are now promoting American-made ideas. So that's a tribute to all of us who have kept this movement going for all these years. But before you don't want to hear from me anymore, I want you to hear from someone who was not able to be with us last week. And the first person today up is Rich Logis. What's going on, Rich?
Hey, Michael. Guys, good morning. I'm really sorry I missed last week. I still feeling a little bit under the weather. You know, even being in warmer winters, Michael, we're still susceptible a little bit to, you know, to getting sick here. And we've had some guests visiting, including from other countries. I really, including Poland, Michael. I hope that I didn't give them a Boca Raton viral infection for the whole country of Poland. because if you hear about it, it's probably from me.
You know,
although
tell them to sing, Rich. Tell them to sing. Remind them of this. Play them this message. In Polish, we say, "Kto śpiewa długo żyje." That means he who sings will live long. Sing them some songs. They'll live long and live better.
Well, if they get this viral infection, they're going to be singing loud. I'm going to tell you that right now. So they also asked me, it was funny that I had this conversation with them. They asked me, they said, "Rich, what is this phenomenon in the United States called Groundhog Day?" And I said, here's what Groundhog Day is. Groundhog Day is a holiday for dumb people who live in the cold weather who think seeing a rodent is going to bring warmer weather 6 weeks accelerated. And they said, and one of our friends from Poland looked at me and he said, "That is pretty dumb." I said, "Well, you know, I don't know. Tell the people who live in the cold. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, we're 78 degrees down here today, Michael. So we're back to normal, but I'm really, happy to be back, Michael. Thank you. I do want to make a comment about a senator who's not too far from you guys, though, Cory Booker. Now, I'm sure that you guys saw that performance yesterday in that hearing. The only word that comes to mind is Brando-esque, what I saw. I mean, that's like Brando when he plays on the waterfront meets Brando, the Godfather Don. You know, that impassioned performance yesterday, screaming and ranting and raving at the Department of Homeland Security Secretary. And, you know, Michael, the thing that I thought, and I went to the Internet today to go to Google and I searched this. I went to search to see if Senator Booker, who used to be the mayor of Newark, I went to the Internet to see if he ever cried tears of rage, if he ever got so pissed off about those guaranteed-to-fail Democrat policies in place in Newark for the last 20,000 consecutive days. And I didn't find anything. You know, so I decided to then look and see if he's gotten pissed off over guaranteed-to-fail policies in place, in Baltimore, 18,000 days, in Philly, 20,000 days, in Chicago, 30,000. And I didn't find anything. You know, Michael, we've got so much anger in the country right now. There's so many people who are so angry. And I just wonder, why don't we direct that anger toward the things we really should be pissed off about? Now, listen, the city of Newark, actually a very historic city. It's a very important city in our American Revolution. There are American Revolution monuments that we have there. They'll probably soon be taken down so we can build clinics to give away birth control pills, because that's what we do now. We whitewash our history by tearing down and destroying monuments. So Newark's a historic city. My mother, who's with us right now, Michael, she's 66. She's from New York originally. I asked her today, I said, "Ma, do you remember a time ever in your life where people said, let's go to Newark? It's a great place to go. It's great. It's safe. Let's go. Let's bring our kids to the county fair." Do you ever remember a time? Michael, do you ever remember a time being in Philadelphia for as long as you've lived? Do you ever remember a time saying, "Let's go to Camden? You guys want to go to Camden? Let's go to the county fair at Camden." When's the last time you said that, Michael? Do you think?
No, I don't think it's been said for a while.
Have you ever said it? So I wrote to Senator Booker today, but I didn't attack him, because I'm actually trying to follow the Scalia approach of not attacking the person, but attacking the ideas. And because that's a very mature way of going about political differences. And I asked him today, I said, "Senator, did you ever cry tears of rage over the guaranteed to fail, guaranteed to kill policies in Newark and elsewhere?" And of course he won't write back to me. And you know what? It's all over, Michael. You know what that Brando-esque performance was all about? It was about something that was allegedly said in a meeting where there's absolutely no evidence of it, Curtis. There's zero proof of anything. I don't ever remember a time in our American major Democrat media industrial complex. I don't ever remember a time, guys, where it was so prevalent that there are no actual sources or proof of evidence of this based in the stories that get written. I don't remember a time ever in my adult life where it is a common, acceptable practice to just run with stories with no, and I'm not even talking about the S-hole thing. I'm talking about, there's so many more other things, Michael. So when you talk about the media, Michael, and we talk about the politicians, everybody has to understand something. What Cory Booker does, what MSNBC does, what Dick Durbin in Illinois, another guy, doesn't seem to get mad about them being in Chicago for the last 30,000 consecutive days. He doesn't seem to get mad about that. Why are they not mad about that? Everyone has to understand that the media, the politicians, they are doing what the people who fund them and vote for them and pay for their product want, Michael. Period.
You're right. And Rich, the sad part of all of what you just said, it reflects on the media's desire and Mr. Booker's desire and so many of these other people to continue the victim mentality in America. This is America where you can be the greatest person you can be at your own speed. Get to it. Mr. Booker should have been crying tears of joy and horror, too, when he was trying to say he was going to move things in a positive direction in Newark. He should have said, wow, isn't this a positive thing? But did anything happen? I don't know. But the thing I do know is that what he did the other day was foolish. He should have been screaming, I want my people to have jobs. I hear the tax reductions are going to be great. I hear the relieving of the regulations on our industries going to be a help. Nothing. It's always something to make him a victim and the people around him victims, which does nothing, absolutely nothing, for the general public. Yes, Larkin.
I've got to come to Cory Booker's defense here. I thought it was a little animated what he did and a little hammed up. But about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, I was invited by Cory Booker's office to speak with him in Camden, New Jersey. And by the way, on Newark, the last time I was in Newark, they were having a contest. I mean, in Camden, they were having a contest for small businesses that did well, but they wanted you to finish last. And I thought that was kind of queer. I couldn't figure it out. And the fact of the matter was, first prize was 1 week in Newark. The second prize was 2 weeks in Newark. And the third prize was 3 weeks in Newark. And everybody that was in the contest, if you didn't finish first, second, or third, you had to spend a month in Newark. That's probably one of the oldest vaudevillian jokes that I can recall. So let's all spend at least 1 week in Newark. Cory Booker is a senator from the state of New Jersey who's very impassioned and wants to do the right things. We've got to learn to get along with the other side. He and I spoke together. We spent about 20 minutes in the green room sitting on a couch and just gnawing away. And after introducing myself, I said to him directly, right into his face, that I don't know why I was invited by the senator's office. I am a small business advocate. I am associated with SCORE. But I am juxtaposed to just about every position that I have read in both of your books. I want the same end that you want, but I want to use the different means altogether. And I thought he'd be offended, but he wasn't. And he said, that doesn't mean that we can't work together. That doesn't mean that we can come up with solutions. Who wants to sit on a committee where everybody feels the same way? And, we had this kind of discussion. We went on. There were probably 200 people at this event, 250 in Camden, and it was, let's create a resurgence in Camden and start some small businesses, and Booker was there to encourage everybody and to tell them that there was a way, and I was there to kind of support what he said. All I know is he spoke for about 40 minutes without a note, and it was dynamic. It was great, great speech, and there wasn't any left or right. It was all empowering kind of stuff. I'm obviously a Cory Booker fan. After the whole thing was over and I did my part of talking more about the technical aspects of starting a small business, I came home, and about 10 days later I got a letter from Cory Booker that I have in a picture frame in my office here, for anybody who's been in my office, because they've seen it, it practically hangs at the door. I like Cory Booker, and I think that that Senate subcommittee was there to investigate that incident. You can't ask them to talk about jobs because that's not why they're there. I will admit that if I ever saw him or I choose to write him a note, he won't remember me from a stack of hay, but if I choose to write him, I'll say, listen, you can make all the inferences that you want, but I think it's equally egregious for any senator to sit there and tell somebody who is under oath that they're lying to the country. I mean, you can't do that. Cory Booker, you cannot do that. You have no proof. She is under oath. And she said under oath that she did not hear, she heard rough language. And maybe we ought to take this directly to Curtis and have Curtis give us an idea, because he'll know where I'm coming from. I wouldn't want what I've said in some of my staff meetings ever repeated, because they're very closed and private meetings, and they don't belong in the press. Nixon would turn your eyes black. He's a little potty mouth. They all were little potty mouths. Nixon was exceptional because it was even on tape and you could hear it. But let's not attack Cory Booker for any reason other than on that subject, in that Senate subcommittee hearing, he really didn't have the right to call Madam Secretary a liar.
You know, Larkin, when Cory Booker was being elected to the Senate, people were encouraging him to get involved with a movement like ours. He of course, agreed. Of course, his people up there where he served as mayor need jobs, as do the people in New Jersey. Yet there's been zero focus that I can say from him as a senator or the other senator. On the job issue, no focus at all, and that's disappointing, because here he is, a new senator. He could have taken that new platform and moved forward, but he did not. Curtis, your name was mentioned.
Yes, it was, and thank you, Larkin, and thank you, everyone. This is a great show, Larkin. Thank you for bringing up that very good point. This was a private conversation, a confidential conversation with the President of the United States in the Oval Office. There's been a tradition dating back to the earliest days of our republic, and even before then, that conversations, that confidential conversations, particularly negotiations over matters of state, over legislation, are confidential, and you do not blab them to the public. So Little Dickie Durbin, the senator from Illinois, I would like to see him try this stunt in Chicago, to go in and have a conversation with Rahm Emanuel about how he can deliver aid to certain wards of Chicago and not other wards of Chicago, how he could sit down with the mayor of Chicago and maybe the alderman there and start dividing up the pie as to see who's going to get what kind of aid from the federal government, where it can go, which programs can be funded, which programs can't be funded, and then reveal the details of that negotiation. I think that Little Dickie Durbin would find himself run over by a garbage truck in the middle of the night unexpectedly if he did something like that, and he knew and he knows that's what would happen to him if he dared to cross a Chicago politician. Yet despite that knowledge, he decides to act like a little tattletale and run out and reveal the details of a confidential negotiation where, as Lyndon Baines Johnson would say, they got down to the nut cutting. That's what they were doing in that office, in that meeting. They were discussing the details of how we can make a deal to keep the government open and to take care of this DACA situation. The blind hatred towards this president is so implacable that they will trash every institution. His enemies will trash every institution, every tradition, and every norm, and every fundamental precept of governance in order to destroy him. It is impossible to have legislative progress if you cannot have a candid conversation in confidence with the people. Dick Durbin has now just disqualified himself from any future negotiation. Why would anyone ever sit down with this man in a confidential setting to discuss anything? How would he like it, or how would Cory Booker like it if, when he sat down with his staff, if his staff ran out and jumped in front of the cameras and said, well, this is what he said, this is what he said about that person, this is what he said about that issue. I mean, come on. And as I said, going back to Rahm Emanuel, every other word out of that man's mouth is the F-bomb. I've been in private meetings with Rahm Emanuel. I know how this guy talks. It is so for Dick Durbin, I am shocked to hear language like that coming out of a high elected official. The guy's a fraud. I mean, this is this manufactured outrage. They're clutching their pearls. As you rightly pointed out, Richard Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, John Kennedy, all these people had foul mouths. They talked like people. And that's
damn humans.
They didn't talk like college professors giving a lecture to the undergraduate students. They, and even some of them talk that way too when they're giving lectures. They talk like people trying to get something done. Now, as to the substance of what President Trump said, the substance of what he said is not only valid, it's absolutely true. Why are we bringing in, why do we have an immigration system that prioritizes bringing in the least educated, most violent, most corrupt, most dysfunctional places on earth? I mean, these are perfectly lovely people that live there. It's not their fault that the governments are corrupt, that they're ruled by gang violence, crony capitalism, and no education. But what do those, how can those people contribute to this society and assimilate into our society? And this is particularly a question for Cory Booker, because as both of you have said, and everybody knows, the people of Newark and the people of Camden need jobs. And unfortunately, in a large part because so much money is now being spent on English as second language courses in the public schools are not educating the native-born Americans to the standards where they can get higher value, higher skill, higher paying jobs. So many of the people in the inner cities, in Newark and in Camden, who happen to be people of color, are concentrated at the lower end of the wage scale. And they are then, therefore, in direct competition with people from El Salvador, Haiti, and other countries who are poor, who have no skills, who have few language skills, and they're directly competing with the people that the mayor of Newark, the mayor of Camden, the people elected to represent those people should be trying to help. So we're already starting to see the fruits of President Trump's policies on immigration and on making America great again. We're starting to see wages rise. We're starting to see businesses having to pay more in order to fill the jobs that are available. And as we start to cut back on legal as well as illegal immigration and start prioritizing people with higher skills rather than unending supply of low-skill labor, we're going to see wages at the bottom end of the pay scale begin to rise. And this is what scares the bejesus out of the Democrats, that their minority voters, the people who have traditionally been wholly owned subsidiaries of the Democratic Party, the people that the Democratic Party regard as landed serfs, will start to see that, well, gee, the policies of Donald Trump are helping us more than those people who have been telling us for the last 50 years they're going to help us by giving us more government handouts. We can actually do better by working and earning for ourselves what the government is always promising but can never give us, which is a decent life and self-respect. This is the cold panic that is gripping the Democratic Party and has led them to the histrionic display that we've seen by Cory Booker yesterday and that we've seen by so many other elected Democrats over the last week. They have nothing else to say. They can no longer deny the solid achievements and accomplishments of Donald J. Trump and his policies, so they seek to distract by screaming racism. I learned in ninth grade English that all words, all works of literature, and even history are interpretive. There are many possible meanings that can be drawn from history, from literature, and even from words. Words have a literal and a figurative meaning. For the Democrats and the enemies of Donald Trump and the media, who really should know better because they deal in communication, to act as if there is only one possible interpretation for a word or phrase flies in the face of ninth grade English, the ninth grade English that I was taught those many years ago. So perhaps the educational standards have dropped, and what people are being taught in high school English has dropped, and maybe that's because so many resources are being diverted to teaching people English because they never learned it in the country in which they were born. But the standards of education have dropped. Maybe it's because the standards of education have dropped so much that even the people in the communications industry do not understand how to communicate, and that words have many meanings. And while some may believe that what President Trump said was racist, that is not the only possible interpretation. And if you are an objective reporter, you should report that. You should not take the position that there's only one possible way to understand what he said, and we're going to tell you what that is. This reveals and exposes the dangerous totalitarian instinct that is rising in this country on the left. There is only one acceptable opinion. There is only one acceptable way to think. We're going to tell you what that way to think is. And if you disagree, that is an unacceptable opinion. And we're going to ban you from Twitter. We're going to ban you from Facebook. We're going to excoriate you as deplorable. And we're going to ostracize you from polite society. That seems to be the instinct that's rising, whether we see it in some of the we see it in many quarters. Let's just put it that way. The most obvious has been this latest flare-up over these basic common sense comments which the president is alleged to have said. He's alleged to have said what so many people are thinking.
Well said. I agree, and I want to say that in many meetings, many things are said, and it should never be reported because it does divide people. And that's exactly what the news media is trying to do. You know, Curtis and Mark and Rich and Larkin, for years and years, my great-grandparents came to America. My grandparents, three of them, were born here in America. And then they were all welcome to America, mainly because of the Industrial Revolution. They came knowing that they were going to become Americans. They were going to have jobs. They were going to contribute to society. They added enormously to the Industrial Revolution and to all of the years that followed by raising their families and working and contributing to their communities. We are bringing in people from all over the world on all kind of lotteries and things like that. Believe it or not, the people who've immigrated to America legally in the last 30 or 40 years object to the fact that all these people have just been allowed to enter the country with no real understanding, like why they're coming. Are they going to become Americans? Are they just going to be people living within America? You know, it's not, the whole thing has got to be changed. I myself am for stopping all immigration for 2 years. 2 years until we get all the facts and figures together and make the rules and regulations as to how and why we immigrate to America. What contributions are the people going to do? Not that we're going to be contributing to them as America's taxpayers, but how are they going to come here and contribute to our way of life and become part of the American workforce and the American family? That's the bottom line. A lot of the people, and I'm in human services, people tell me point blank very often, I don't like what's happening. We're just bringing in people that we don't know. I came here to add to America. I came here to be an American.
You make a couple of very good points, which is the danger of bringing in people who don't know if they're going to become citizens. They're coming here as H-1B visa holders, guest workers, things like that, temporary protected status, et cetera, et cetera. So they have not bought into the American project. They have not bought into our basic values. They're coming here for a job, yet they can't vote. They have no desire to vote, perhaps. They have no desire to be American citizens. This is part of the larger problem, but it's a larger problem that fits very neatly into the United Nations project, where you have a rootless population of migrants that can move anywhere in the world at the whims of the employing class. And that's very dangerous. And the other thing, the idea of a two-year moratorium on immigration is certainly, let's put it this way, that has been done before, right? After the last great wave of immigration in the 1890s, come the 1920s, the U.S. Congress passed and the president signed very restrictive immigration laws. They said, enough. We need time to assimilate the people who have come in. We need time to Americanize them and make them part of one nation, one culture, one society. We can't have unending waves of people speaking different languages, coming from different cultures, not knowing who they are or where they are. We've got to make this one. And the final point I just want to make to follow up on what you said, because a lot of people now say, well, we're a nation of immigrants and your grandparents came as immigrants. And they're probably referring to that time in the 1890s. At that time, as you said, they came here and they knew they had to work. There was no welfare. There was no Social Security. There were no food stamps. There were no Obama phones. There was no unemployment. There was any welfare assistance was private, done by churches or charities or the Salvation Army or the Bowery Mission. But that was it. You came here, you knew you had to work or you would die. That is not the case now. So you cannot make a straight apples-to-apples comparison of, well, you know, we should just open our borders and let people come in the way we did in the 1890s when they put that nice poem on the base of the Statue of Liberty. The comparison doesn't hold up. And if you do want to compare that period to this period, you have to remember what immediately followed that period of immigration, a moratorium on immigration. And then through the crucible of depression and World War, we forged a singular identity, a singular cultural identity and society from the disparate peoples from around the world who came here. And it took close to 50 years to do that. And as George Borjas, the Harvard economist, in his book, We Wanted Workers, points out, it took even longer than that for that wave of immigrants and their children to reach the same pay scale as the native-born Americans. From 1890 to 1960, it took that long before the immigrants were earning as much as the native-born Americans.
I agree. And, you know, Curtis, if you can get the information of when that exactly took place, the president that signed it, I think that that's something I would like to post on our site and even send out to our email people, because I'm hearing it more and more from people. Why are we just an open door? The DACA situation has also, you know, sparked a lot of talk amongst people. They're going to get free education. They're getting this. They're getting that. Why can't we ask them to repay back for their education and everything? Everything free, free, free. This is not a free venture in America. People are asked to work, provide for themselves, provide for their families, and be model citizens. The reason we have so much crime in America, and I will say this through working through human services, is because we don't have people working and feeling good about themselves.
I'd like to read a message that Donald Trump, President Trump, released today. And I think you'll find it very interesting. It's very cogent to this conversation we're having. It's a presidential message honoring Barbara Jordan. And this is what President Trump released today. It's both a right and a responsibility of a democratic society to manage immigration so that it serves the national interest. With this simple common sense perspective, civil rights icon Barbara Jordan challenged our nation's leaders to maximize opportunities for all Americans by adopting an immigration policy that puts American citizens first. Barbara Jordan epitomized the American dream she worked so tirelessly to protect. In 1966, she was elected to the Texas Senate, the first African-American woman in our nation's history to serve in that body. And in 1973, Jordan became the first woman to serve Texas in the United States House of Representatives. Throughout her career, she recognized that an immigration policy that puts Americans first is an important civil rights issue. As chairman of the U.S. Commission on Immigration Reform, now called the Jordan Commission in her honor, she stood up to special interests, determined to profit politically and financially from our broken immigration system. She remained steadfast in promoting common sense reforms that would better protect the rights and needs of America. Jordan called for an end to chain migration, which has allowed millions upon millions of low-skilled foreign nationals to compete for opportunities and resources against our most vulnerable American citizens, many of whom come from African American and Hispanic American communities. She also called for the mandatory use of an electronic employment verification system, now known as E-Verify, to finally turn off the jobs magnet that lures so many illegal immigrants to our country. Though Barbara Jordan passed away on January 17, 1996, her noble fight to secure prosperity, fairness, and equal opportunity for America's workers lives on. In the spirit of Jordan's vision, my administration has taken an America First approach to immigration. As a result, illegal immigration is down, and reports from around the country are showing companies increasing wages and hiring Americans pushed out of the labor market during past administrations. My administration is optimistic that Republicans and Democrats in Congress will come together for the good of our country to pass legislation that secures our southern border with a wall, stops chain migration, and ends the visa lottery program once and for all. By doing so, we will serve American interests, secure the promise of our economy for every American citizen, and strengthen the American dream for future generations. So that's today, honoring Barbara Jordan, an African-American woman who spoke up and understood that the flood of endless flood of cheap, low-skilled immigration is hurting Americans, and particularly hurting African-Americans and Hispanics. And since you were from Texas, let me just add one last note on this. Lyndon Johnson, as senator from Texas, when he was senator, was approached by the Mexican-Americans living in Texas, and they asked him, please end the guest worker program, known as the Bracero program, where the planters and ranchers of Texas would bring in a guest worker labor from Mexico to pick the crops. They said, please end this program. Do not renew this program. It's hurting our people. We cannot get decent wages if we're competing against the peasants of Mexico coming in. And Johnson, like a good politician, said, I hear you, okay. But then the planters and the ranchers and the farm owners came to Johnson and said, hey, please renew the program. We need that cheap labor. Johnson renewed the program because he knew where his bread was buttered. All of these politicians who are up there saying they are now fighting, focusing full-time on the illegal immigrants and on the immigration and opening our borders to people from the poorest countries on earth, they are doing what Lyndon Johnson did. They are serving the interests of those who want cheap labor and would rather not pay American citizens decent wages.
Well said. Oh, Curtis, that was unbelievable. That was unbelievable. And that just reminds me of my conversation with someone this past Monday when they said, I don't understand why the DACA issue has to be involved with the budget issue. They should be two separate issues. And as you speak about the last few statements made, I understand maybe that's really where we should be. The DACA issue should stand on its own, and the budget should stand on its own as well. Whenever you try to put piggyback something on one another, it doesn't work out too well. And that's my thought.
How many times did Obama say, send me a clean spending bill? We've got to raise the debt limit. Send me a clean debt limit bill.
I think it should be a clean. It should be a clean budget bill, not attached with anything.
Yeah.
Mark Andel, you've been listening to all this. Wow, what an unbelievable broadcast today.
Yeah, great discussion, guys. Welcome. Yeah, I've been listening. Rich, how'd you know? I'm one of them northern guys and sitting in 10 degrees waiting for a rodent to come up. You know? I don't know how Rich knows all this. But great discussion. You know, Larkin, you touched that. On these meetings, just to go back to the Oval Office, Curtis, you brought up and into White House, a meeting for the media to target a meeting and go inside and then focus and target the president on something that was said. I sit in meetings every day, every week, all different sizes. Larkin, you met my father. He's 81. You can't put a filter on him. I mean, yeah. He's going to do my last radio interview, you know, because it won't be one after. You know, you can't, in these meetings, I tell my people it's customer service, customer number one, but in my meetings internally in General Welding, there's things that are said I would never want my customer to hear or anybody. So that is just for the media to pick on these words and these sayings, because people have passions in meetings. You're not having a meeting if you're not arguing and bickering and passions coming out, because you're not going to get a good end product. So that's my take on that. It's just this media is out of control. Nobody governs it. They don't. Nobody holds them accountable and responsible, and I thank Donald Trump for bringing that out. I think the people, they got to wake up, and they're watching this media. There's got to be a stop to what can be said. There's so many positive things. We got to develop one team, one goal, one country, one goal. So I think your discussion has been excellent. Curtis, point on.
Mark, I want to tell you something. This has been a more historic discussion today than most would believe. We talked more common sense today than we've heard in the media for weeks. It's not only just over the last few days. It's been weeks. It's the same garbage. Yep. Then they're going to be waiting to get to the presidential discussion this week. And what more can they do? He was on the golf course. And this doctor deal yesterday, unbelievable.
Hey, Mike, I got one question for the panel and specifically probably Curtis. This tax, this new tax code and the changes and code 179, Curtis, I don't know if you know much about it, but it's going to be allow $1 million to be spent on equipment and whatnot. I think it's outstanding. What's your take? My take on it, I mean, it's a positive, enthusiastic tax change that I think a lot of business people I talk to are excited about. What's your take on the feeling out there?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with the enthusiasm of the business owners you're talking to, and that's the point of it, is to increase investment. President Trump said he wants to make America the best place on earth to live, work, invest, and do business. So this is clearly aimed at boosting investment. If we and we've seen some of the payoff, this could be a big piece. Well, I mean, $1 million is probably small potatoes when you look at the Fiat Chrysler deciding they're going to build in Michigan rather than in Mexico.
But for Mark Gandel, it's huge.
Yeah, so the whole point of this is to, while we focus on tax cuts and putting money in middle-class consumers' pockets, which is absolutely important and great, we also want to make it more favorable to invest in this country because we are in a competition with other countries that have been using all kinds of squirrely means to get people to get businesses to invest and build there.
That's spot on. And, you know, I want to just add something. You know, I said at the beginning of the year that I was going to be brutally honest, but there are some times when I find it impossible to defend the press. I really do. And here's my bet. I don't know if there's any of you are interested in taking on a good strong bet. I'm going to bet you two things, two separate bets. Just send me an email if you want to take me. I'm taking any amount of money. I'm here to tell you, and I will use, and I'm going to name them. We'll use CBS as the base of this bet. Yesterday, or the day before, I can't remember which day, the market hit 26,000. It's a new high. It's so new. It's totally unbelievable that the market would be at that point. CBS on their evening news said, as a tag going out to a commercial, the market hit 26,000 this afternoon. No charts, no graphs, no nothing. That's all they said. And what, to me, is probably one of the top 10 most significant things to happen in the last quarter, maybe even the last half year, is to have the market hit that level. I'm telling you that it will go unaddressed for the following week, the fact that we're on such a high. But if that market starts to teeter and there's any sense of adjustment, they're gonna go out there and hammer him. See, he's all baloney. I mean, you know, the press is not being fair. They are not. Period. Amen.
All negative.
Anybody from the press is willing to argue with me. Hey, knock yourself out. Bring it on. I'd love to do it.
Well, you know, I would hope that the president would, in order to help himself explain to the American people during his State of the Union, have a few charts available to show what it was when he came into office, what it is today, what the tax regulations were, what they are today, what the reductions in the regulations were and what they are today that are helping to create jobs for American workers. There was a job fair in the Philadelphia area yesterday, and many, many people came out to the job fair. It was pretty rough weather yesterday, but they came out. And there are many people out there more enthusiastic about what's going to happen in the American economy. There's also one part where the people are well-educated, but they have no hands-on experience, as Mark, you know better than anybody else. And just to look to be a salesperson or a web developer or someone who's going to be in an executive position, that's not what's needed today. We already have enough of them. We need those sewers, the tailors, the industrial machine mechanics and things like that. And yet at the job fairs, no one's coming out to fill those jobs.
Yeah. That's why this show is so excellent. We got such a well-rounded table here to educate, raise awareness, be consistent with our message. It's just so important to educate the people what is actually going out there. I'm in the game, so that helps. Curtis, you're Washington. Larkin, which score? You work with the entrepreneurs and inventors. You know what they're going through, and Rich, you are one. And Mike, you see it all. you know, being in Philadelphia, it's just a great panel. I mean, hats off to the crew here, but we've got to continue to educate what is actually happening out there.
What is happening? What is happening? And, you know, if the press was smart, they would get up there and say, we're asking all school boards to consider this, to put the trades back, to put bookkeeping back, you know, let every boy and girl know how to do a checking account, how to balance a checking account. They're not doing that. It's all idioticness. They're all worrying about the president's physical. They're worrying about Cory Booker, what he has to say. I'd like to see Cory Booker get up there and start screaming for jobs for the people of New Jersey. I'd like Cory Booker to put up a chart and say, this is how many people we have in Jersey. This is how many working age and able-bodied people that should be working. And this is how many people are working. How many people still need a job.
But why do we got great change going on, positive change for the good, but they will not discuss it?
They won't discuss it. You're absolutely
right.
That's
sad, because that shows you the
divide. It's going to be up to the president himself to go up there and let the American people during the State of the Union say, guess what, guys? If you didn't hear it in the media or you didn't see it through your own sources, the stock market is here or there. And we've gotten so many new jobs. And because of regulations, we're going to be able to move this forward. He has to be his own salesman.
It's like not admitting that the Eagles won, Henry.
Yeah.
and Larkin's team's not in it.
Oh, I didn't say it, Larkin. He did.
This is fact.
I will tell you, you know, we have to do something. You know, as you look at yourself and all the people around you, you see that the clock only goes in one direction, and that's forward. Well, for more than 35 years, we were looking at each other and seeing the clock was moving forward. And we also watched thousands of America's industries leave America. And most of the owners said they're leaving because of rising taxes, over regulations, the cost of rising insurance rates for their companies, as well as for their employees. They left America to do business where it can be done cheaper.
And I'll tell you guys, every day I'm thanked and I give people hope in our team with the Made in America store. We met the VOC in Rochester, a great group, veteran run. They want products in our wholesale leg. They love certified products because they've got flags that said Made in China on it. But people love what we're doing. People love this movement. They love the show. They love what we're about, grassroots and people doing good things. We give people hope. And I thank you, Mike, for even having this show. It's just all part of the movement. And it is a movement. And our listeners, I just go out, buy Made in America. You're making a difference listening. And stay in the course. Stay focused on what we're doing.
And, you know, I beg people. I beg businesses. I beg employees working for businesses. This year especially, urge the people you work for, or if you're a businessman yourself, get a label on your packaging, get a label on your product that says made or assembled here in the United States of America. If you need more ideas or what it could look like, go to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. It's clearly laid out on the front page.
And it's happening, Mike. I mean, I started with 50 products almost 8 years ago. We're at 7,000. So it's just like the fake news and the media won't talk about positive. The Made in America movement's alive, and it's happening. It's taking time, but it is in progress. It's got momentum. It's a huge flywheel, and it's moving.
You know, I one thing I must say about the president, I had the pleasure of meeting Donald Trump 14 years ago, 15 years ago, another time. I was at some events I mentioned to you in Atlantic City. He was there. But the thing is, we've been working very hard through local newspapers and radios and internet sites, but he came and was the guy we needed to be the cheerleader, the main cheerleader. And now we are seeing progress as a result of this person. And of course, everybody says, oh, I wish he could be more eloquent or whatever. That's all well and good. We had eloquence for many years. We need to hear it.
We
need to hear it the way it needs to be said and heard by the general public. You know, we're on the radio. We watch FCC regulations. But also, when we're together, we could say it the way it really is. And Dick Durbin, of course, what he did is foolishness. And I agree with Curtis. You are absolutely right. If he was in Chicago and he went to the mayor's office, he wouldn't be around. He'd be ill for a while.
I want to make one quick request on air, please, if I may. So the President's State of the Union address is on my birthday this year, January 30th. And I call her Clockwork Orange, Federica Wilson, the congresswoman down here.
That's
my nickname for her. I call her Clockwork Orange. So she's in Florida. I'm from Florida. So if you, Curtis, any request you can make on my behalf to the president, given that it's on my birthday, I will personally come to Washington. I will sit in the seat where Congresswoman Wilson normally sits. I will attend the State of the Union proudly, and I will also bring a complimentary copy of my upcoming book for all congressmen and women, 10 Warning Signs Your Child is Becoming a Democrat. I'll bring a copy for everyone, signed, sealed, and delivered, Curtis. So anything you can do, I really appreciate, irrespective of the outcome.
Uh-huh. I thought you were going to give her a sort of viewing aid for the State of the Union, for the State of the Union address, kind of what they used on Alex and Clockwork Orange.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, it is time to say farewell for today's broadcast. I want to first of all ask you to go to our internet site, email that link to family and friends, get them involved, and also go for Made in the USA. When you download that Buy American app, you will also get American Workers Radio, where you can listen to it on your computer, your iPhone, whatever. Do check out the links on the front page. I want to say thank you to Larkin Connolly, to Curtis Ellis, to Rich Logis, Mark Andel, our engineer Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash. I thought it was a great show. You need this type of roundtable discussion to really let people know what's going on. I do like also the fact that people tell me in my travels that they like this kind of discussion. They like hearing what each person has to say. It's unrehearsed. Everything we do here is unrehearsed. So my thanks to everyone. Until this Saturday at 11 a.m. or next Wednesday at 11 a.m., stay tuned to this broadcast. Stay tuned to Positive News Networks and go out and support the Buy American Made campaign. My very best.
Have a great week, guys. Go
Thanks,
Eagles.
Everyone.